Welcome back to the Last Lap podcast, Tuesday edition post-race Zandvoort Grand Prix. We'll touch a little bit on the race, but more and all, there's lots of stories to cover. Of course, there always is in Formula One. Niren, how are you doing? We do have the Newcastle-Liverpool game on in the background. And yep. As a Liverpool fan, who is 1-0 down and one player down, How are you feeling?
I have been better. I'm not going to lie to you. I've been better. Oh, Luis Diaz is coming off. Man, I'm going to cry. It's been real, everyone.
We'll distract you by talking about the Formula One.
Thank you very much. Yeah, I feel like that's
with
needed.
Two guests once again. I would ask James, thank you for joining us from the live stream. How are we both doing?
Yeah, really well. I really enjoyed the race.
Yep.
Great one to start with.
Filled up on pizza as well.
Yeah, very well. I needed that kind of...
You were hankering for that pizza,
exactly. And also, as an Everton fan, I'm loving what's going on here as well.
Absolutely.
I'm chilling, man. I'm
absolutely.
Yeah, not very glad that we're bottom of the league, but for now, this is good.
There you go. Well, no, he's top of the league. He's Max Verstappen with his 9 wins in a row, extends his lead at the top of the championship and matches Sebastian Vettel's record. I mean, feels pretty inevitable and pretty well-deserved, I think.
Yeah, I mean, the performance itself was inevitable, wasn't it? There was at no stage did he feel under threat. And he was always in control, even when after the downpour right at the start, where Perez took the lead after he boxed on the very first lap, Verstappen closed the 11.5-second deficit in a flash. Heartbeat, he was behind Perez and suddenly he was ahead with a cleverly executed undercut. So, yeah. Really, really inevitable. Never under threat.
This was not one of those races where he just started on pole and then just led from the, you know, from start to finish, 20, 30 second gap. He had to work for this one. He had to, again, you know, obviously Checo managed to kind of pit early and kind of get ahead of him. But yeah, it was definitely an earned win for him. And I mean, 9 in a row is just... It's definitely unprecedented in terms of, like, people talk about records, you know, being broken. But for it to be broken that quickly after Seb... I mean, it's only been, you know, a decade. That's crazy. So, and we don't know where he's going to leave that benchmark this season. I mean, it's almost a guarantee that he'll probably win the next one and, you know, beat it and have the outright kind of 10 wins in a row, which is just insane. But is this going to go on until Abu Dhabi? I mean, no one knows. So yeah, we're witnessing history and also a driver that, again, it's not just the car because his teammate was 1.3 seconds off in qualifying. He is absolutely maximizing. He's got a great car, obviously, but he's just maximizing every last bit that Red Bull RB19 has. So yeah, it's what more can you say about him, really, other than just he's inevitable?
It's one of those where it's like, if he wins this race, he has to, like, he just has to win every race. Because, like, today should have been realistically a race where it's like, oh, you know, changeable conditions, whatever, absolute chaos. Like, surely someone is on level terms with him, or surely there's a mistake or something happens that's like bad luck, whatever. But like, even in a race like a classic that we had today, where he's still on top, and like you said, it was never really in doubt.
Mm-hmm.
That's where it's like, well, he's going to win all the calm ones then, isn't he? Do you know what I mean?
Well, never ever has a team won every single race in a season. That's never even you think like the 92 Williams with Mansell was an amazing car. Even then, you know, reliability wasn't... The thing is, reliability was a bigger factor back then. These cars are so bulletproof relative to how they were in the 90s, 80s, 70s and that. So I think that also plays into it as well. But Max is just maximizing every race. I think there's a difference to an extent between, so do I think Bottas and Perez, right, Bottas Mercedes, Mercedes Bottas versus Red Bull Perez, do I think there's a massive difference in terms of the driver quality between Bottas and Hamilton and Perez and Verstappen? I think it was substantial for both. But I think that Mercedes being a, you know, when that was a dominant car and it was low rake, it seemed like a more stable, like the way that Mercedes would just go through corners just on rails and it would look so planted in the hands of both Lewis and Valtteri. I think this Red Bull, and it's always just conditioned this way because it's Max's style, he loves it so much on the nose that it is, I think it's less of a stable platform, it's more of a challenge to get the maximum out of it, and it just happens that Max's style fits with that car.
I think the fundamental difference as well though is qualifying, because Bottas did have, there was these random tracks where I remember, I think Russia was always a track where he was kind of all right.
He beat Lewis 30% of the time.
Yeah,
it's so 30-70 basically.
And never missed Q3 once.
In 5 years.
Exactly, never missed Q3 once. He had that record for ages.
That's
and so
crazy.
He always had these kind of like circuits where he was quite good in qualifying, and that's all he needed, because I don't think he was a great race driver, which sounds a bit strange. He was never good at overtaking. I mean, there was some howlers from him. But
shockers.
When you qualify well, you do give yourself a chance to get those race wins. And so But that, and that's the thing with Perez. He just hasn't. You know, I think he had one pole position, obviously, this year, I think, in Saudi. That's because Max wasn't in it. Mm. So that's the really big difference between, I think, it's, in terms of race, actually, I think Perez may be even a tiny bit better than Bottas, but
yeah,
it's that qualifying that just gets him nowhere near. Even in this race, what was he, seventh?
Mm.
That's not good enough, especially because if it wasn't for that kind of little half spin where Alonso overtook him, it would have been a Red Bull 1-2. If he hadn't got also that, you know, penalty for the pit lane, the pace was in that car for a 1-2. And so, yeah, it's just, I think that's the thing with Perez. It's qualifying and where he's just getting
unfortunately for him,
near.
As long as that gap is as big as it is, 1.3 seconds is a huge gap around a track like Zandvoort. Mm. As long as we're going to be talking about this. The thing is, though, you know, if a driver was to come in to replace him, you know, Ricciardo jumps into an AlphaTauri, now he's copped this injury, which is going to put him out for at least 100% Monza. Potentially
might even be the Grand Prix after that, to be honest with you.
Could well be Singapore, could well be, it depends, right? It's a broken metatarsal.
Mm.
Metatarsal? No, that's in your foot. Metacarpal.
Yeah.
It's in your hand.
It's in your hand.
And you said, Alex, he's going to the same doctor, right, James, that Stroll went to?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Lance Stroll, obviously, he broke his wrist before pre-season testing and did none of pre-season testing. It was all Felipe Drugovich. And then Stroll jumped back into the car pretty much on the Friday. And yeah, instead of having whatever they had, 3 or 4 days of unlimited running, he then had to do 3 FP1 sessions and in you go. And you actually saw he was really struggling physically. I mean, Stroll took his hand off the wheel a number of times in order to kind of save his wrist.
It looks a bit sketchy.
For Ricciardo, you know, you go to somewhere like Monza, which is probably really quite demanding. You know, you have to break, a lot of load will go through the body when they're braking from those high speeds. And then even Singapore, bumpy,
even more
twisty,
yeah,
on those hands, it's really quite difficult. Mm. So Sergio Perez, he almost could be saved by this Ricciardo injury, but then because it doesn't give Ricciardo a chance to prove kind of all yeah of what he's got.
Mm-hmm.
But then at the same time, you know, as you say, the more he keeps underperforming, the more likely it is that, you know, Helmut Marko becomes increasingly impatient and he's not one for hanging around and suddenly snap. There's a change up. So yeah, I mean, Perez has really been struggling over the course of the season. He's missed out on the top 6 in qualifying 8 out of the 13 times.
Yeah,
which is a hugely, you know, eye-opening stat. So yeah, he's really struggled.
I mean, I also think that I think the difference between now and when it was with Albon and Gasly is that because Red Bull are winning championships and dominating championships with Max, I feel like there's almost in the back of, like, you know, Dr. Marco's mind that just keep it as is. You know, Max is winning his championships. There's less of a reason at the moment, because they are winning, to yeah drop Perez, versus like with Gasly and Albon, there was more of a reason to drop them because they were behind. You know, every single time they saw what Max was doing and pushing, sometimes Ferrari and Mercedes, and they thought, we need another driver to do that.
The issue presents itself if the other teams catch up, Nick.
Exactly.
Year, which yes is a big
exactly if what we had with Bottas, isn't it? Where it's just like, you know, now that Mercedes weren't so dominant in that specific moment, it was like, okay, well, we can't actually afford to have you being like ninth spinning at Turkey all the time.
Yeah.
Because we've actually got challenges now. Do you know what I mean? So now, ladies and gentlemen, today's show is sponsored by the beautiful people over at NordVPN. Massive shout out to them.
Ooh.
Do you want to tell the people what they do?
VPN, virtual private network.
Yeah, yeah.
That is near, isn't it?
I heard the very same.
Listen, when you're away, all right, I went to a few Grand Prix, you know, I went hungry, didn't I?
Indeed,
right,
indeed.
Last month, and VPN came in clutch.
Yep.
Because region locked content, right? If you want to watch your Netflix, even like YouTube, a lot of stuff. Region locked with NordVPN.
Twitter as well. Like if I want to see the football highlights, but you know what I mean?
All the
but
time.
They're always like American, like yeah region locked.
There's certain channels, yeah, you go on and it'll be like one of the, I think one of the Middle Eastern networks that posts a lot of highlights.
Indeed,
like, I want to see this banging goal. Stick your region lock on, put yourself in Bahrain, bosh, job done.
Bosh, exactly. You can even stay safe from malware with NordVPN's threat protection.
Never stop with the fastest VPN on the planet.
The fastest.
The F1 of VPNs.
Yes, the Red Bull, if you will.
The RB VPN.
Oh, that's good from you.
And we do have an exclusive discount just for you with us here at The Last Lap on a NordVPN plan. All right, we'll sort you out. NordVPN.com/TLL.
The Last Lap. It all makes sense.
That's a great little acronym.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And
yeah,
you will also receive 4 months extra for free, and there's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee.
Oh, beautiful.
Mate, what a touch. What a touch. You can't tell me we don't give back to the people.
That is sensational. And you can find that link down in the description box for this video.
NordVPN.com/TOL. Get it done.
Yeah, I mean, again, the top six at Zandvoort, all different teams, six different teams, which is, again, like, you know, if it's not a Red Bull Max dominant season, you know, and you've got that competitiveness at the front, that's like amazing. I mean, Gasly got a podium, for crying out loud. Like, amazing result. But I think it's what, again, for Ricciardo, because I've seen a few people being like, this is it for Ricciardo now. This is, he's got this injury. He's going to be out. This is his chance gone. Because the thing is, Ricciardo's not interested in staying in AlphaTauri. Like, at this point of his career, he needs to get into that Red Bull seat as soon as possible. And he's put his cards on the table. He's been like, I want to be Red Bull. I started my career here. I want to end my career here. Like, he's very much been like, gone all in, and wants Red Bull to know that I want to be in that seat. And I think as well, like, Red Bull as a team, historically, should know how to get the best out of Daniel.
Yeah.
They should know, if they can look at his data over years that he raced with the team and be like, right, well, can we put two and two together and think, right, can his style work with our car? I mean, it worked with the Renault. He did a great job at the Renault. Mm. Didn't at the McLaren. But already at AlphaTauri, he's not complaining about the car like he was about the McLaren, having to drive in this unnatural way. And he did a pretty good job in his first two races. But I do, it just depends on how, I'm gutted. Of all the drivers to have this injury, he's the one.
Annoying. Yeah, it's frustrating that it's him. I think it's not over, because he's still got like Grand Prix to come back to. It's just like,
how many?
Yeah,
we don't know.
Yeah, of course. Let's say, for sake of arguing, if this is Monza and Singapore, then at least he's still got what, maybe like nine races.
I think it's like seven, because there was seven 10 left. Yeah. So with this one, with Monza and then Singapore, seven left. That's still a decent amount of Grand Prix.
It's enough to prove yourself. It's just that there's no margin for error there at that point. You know,
I mean, best case scenario, I think Singapore. And Singapore's like the toughest Grand Prix. I mean, Alex had to come back to Singapore after his appendicitis, and that's tough. And then you've got Singapore, Japan, it's a double header. Then LaSalle, then US, Mexico, Brazil, Vegas, Abu Dhabi. So there's still like a good chunk of races on the board for Daniel.
Yeah. But I said during the, when we were watching the race on the watch along, the problem for him is that the one guy that's also trying to get his seat, because he's trying to get Perez's seat, but the one guy that's trying to get his seat is in that car now. Mm. You know, Lawson has managed to find a way in there, and I think he did a fantastic job. Yeah. Like, to be kind of drafted in, talk about last minute, tricky track, unbelievably tricky weather, red flag.
Did he get a dry session at all?
I don't think he did. Only towards, no, he didn't. Because the beginning of qualifying for him was also, you know, wet as well. I think he might have got, I forget if FP3 was wet. But yeah, so it's such a tricky kind of, you know, way to make your debut. But he did a fantastic job to kind of keep it clean. Now you move on. Monza's going to be the big one, because obviously he has a lot of experience around there, as all kind of single-seater drivers do. Difficult to know where the car's going to be. But that's the thing, with Ricciardo out, could Lawson actually maybe prove to the team that, hang on a minute, this guy's got, you know, relative, if they compare what Ricciardo did in two races against Yuki to what Lawson does in two races against Yuki, and it kind of looks like Lawson maybe even does even a little bit better, then they might go, hang on a minute, this guy's actually got a lot of, you know, a lot of potential. Maybe he should 21? Be in that car.
21.
Well, yeah, exactly. And he's won on debut in six different categories. I mean,
unfortunate to miss out today.
Yeah, one of the most adaptable young drivers there is, because you know, you see some drivers that are really, really good in one series and they go up a level or they're down a level and they can't hack it. Whereas, you know, if you're showing that adaptability, that's almost exactly what they want to see.
Yeah.
And Liam Lawson,
especially a Red Bull, it's going to be hard to drive as well, like for the future.
Yeah. You know. And he kept it on the island today, which was a really, really tough race. I mean, two massive downs. Pause in on the wrong tyres, and he'd never used the intermediate tyre before. So, I mean, for Liam Lawson, this is a huge opportunity, and for Daniel Ricciardo, it's a real unfortunate one, because in the same way that De Vries got a drive after one performance at Monza, what's to say that Liam Lawson might not suffer the exact same, I say, fate? But that's not a bad thing. He might really wow them, and so for Ricciardo,
short window, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. And if you put your skills out there, there's people that might want to snap you up, as you know, AlphaTauri was so scared of losing Nyck de Vries to somewhere like Williams that they went for a punt straight away. And you know, so they might do the same for Liam Lawson, perhaps at the expense of Ricciardo, because they know that the future is there.
Yeah, that's the thing. I feel like
in my opinion, if they're not going to, like, even with, let's say Daniel gets 8 more races out of this year, let's say he's able to come back and, you know, I think that's the best case scenario. And he's going to get the best treatment in the world, and these are F1 drivers. They're going to make sure he will be as back as soon as it is humanly possible to be back. And he's going to be motivated to get back. If, let's say he gets 8 races, if in those 8 and the kind of 2 and a bit is already done, like, they should have enough data to make a judgment call on Daniel Ricciardo, as far as I'm concerned. Him and Checo are about the same age. It's a straight up, well, which one is it?
Yeah.
And Daniel's got his...
But to be fair, are we talking this for next year, for 2024?
I'm talking about this for next year, yeah.
Because what about Yuki, though? Because Yuki, like, fair enough, Ricciardo could do a good job, but what about if Yuki just beats him anyway?
Yeah.
So, because actually, what I want to know from each one of you...
They're very good.
What is your next year AlphaTauri? What is your lineup? And also, potentially, who do you think is going to be in that Red Bull for next year? So, Tomo, what do you think?
I still think, even... it's obviously hard to say with this injury, right? But I still... If I had to put money on it, I would put Ricciardo in that Red Bull with Max next year.
And then who's in the AlphaTauri?
And then in the AlphaTauri... Oh, the thing is, like, Tsunoda will have had 3 full seasons. Like, if he can't do enough in 3 full seasons to prove he's going to get in the Red Bull, I don't think he's ever going to get into the Red Bull.
Yeah, but I don't think he'd get... It's actually a difficult one, isn't it? Because, like, I don't think I could ever imagine Checo in a... Obviously, I think that's one part of this equation that's just, like, not possible, is Checo being an AlfaTauri.
Oh, yeah. No, if Checo comes on the market... Yeah.
He's more likely to go to, like, Sauber.
Yeah, or even he'd just retire. He'd just say, call a line under it and go, I'm not going that far back. He's quite old now as well.
That was his shot. He's at his Red Bull shot, and it's not paid off.
Because, trust me, like, yes, he's not... showing himself in the best light now in a top team, but let's not get it twisted. This is a quality midfield driver. This is someone that in an Aston Martin or a McLaren could do a seriously good job, maybe even score podiums. Yep. It's just that pressure of race winning cars.
Environment.
But yeah, we saw what he could do in the Racing Point. So if he comes on the market, I mean, the likes of, I think Alpine might even want to go for him. The likes of Haas will definitely want to go for him. So yeah, I think, you know, he will have options, again, Niren, who do you think then, both Red Bull and also an AlphaTauri? Is Max going to still be there next year?
Oh man, will they lock him down to a new contract? Yeah, I reckon Max might still be there.
Unless he gets bored. Which, you know.
Okay, man, I want to do sim racing instead. Yeah. I genuinely, to be honest, I think it's going to end up being Checo still. I'm not going to lie. Just because unless Daniel Ricciardo really, really proves himself, I just don't know if I see the potential for him to impress them enough, especially now what could end up only being 7 races, for them to make a drastic call like that.
In one of the worst cars on the grid.
Yeah. I mean, it's a massive call, being like, yeah, we're going to drop Checo for Daniel, who is coming off the back of the worst period of his career at McLaren. And we've put him in an AlphaTauri, which is the slowest car on the grid, for 8 races. And he's maybe just edged out Yuki Tsunoda, who might not be good enough to ever drive this car either. Like, that's a crazy thing to, like, and unless Daniel Ricciardo absolutely hammers Yuki, and based on the first 2 races, I don't actually think that's going to happen. I think he'll beat him, but I don't think he'll be like...
No, Yuki was great today.
Yuki was great today. Unlucky time. I think unlucky where it counted.
But in his wheel-to-wheel, like,
didn't have the pace. Like, he was just dropping. But what's your prediction, James, for next?
I've always been of the idea that I think that seat will belong to Yuki Tsunoda in 2025. I just feel like that's the one that's his moment to shine. But then as when you come to think about it, that's 4 complete years at AlphaTauri, and almost someone like even Gasly and Kvyat, they didn't even do that long, but they were there for some time. So I think I do just see them sticking with Perez. There's no reason to upset the apple cart at this stage. And I know they'd be naive not to assume that other teams would catch up. But at the same time, their advantage is so great that even then, you know, they shouldn't have that much trouble, especially with the way Max is driving, that they might be okay. So they've got a difficult balancing act, but I definitely wouldn't, I would be shocked if Perez was out at the end of 2020.
One thing as well, like, as far as I'm aware, all of the Red Bull drivers, both Red Bull Racing and AlphaTauri, are contracted to Red Bull, like the parent company Red Bull, and then they loan the drivers out to the teams. So once the constructors and drivers is settled, like, you know, I'm saying, if they wanted to just be cutthroat and learn as much as they could, they could swap like Perez and Tsunoda or something, or they could swap both for both. They could do that. They could do that. I'm saying they would be able to do that. Yeah. They would be able to, within their contracts, be able to do that.
And if there's any team that's ever going to do something crazy like that, it would be Red Bull.
It would be Red Bull.
I think the only thing that's strange...
It brings so many eyeballs. They're trying to sell Red Bull.
As soon as they wrap up the title, they let Max go on holiday and go, thank you very much. You've run, whatever, 15 races in a row. Now go and spend some time on the beach and we'll assess who you'll be lining up next year.
Racing. But to me, though, the more interesting question, though, is what's the AlphaTauri lineup going to be? Because... they've got three drivers who I think all could be there. And the weird thing is, I think the more
Hugo
likely
Boss
option...
Hugo Boss racing lineup.
Hugo, yeah, Hugo Boss, Red Bull Racing, whatever it is. But the thing is, how... To me, it almost doesn't make sense to have Ricciardo and Tsunoda there. It's got to be, to me, either one or the other who could potentially be the next in line for Red Bull. And then you get the junior, you know, Liam Lawson in there as well to kind of get the conveyor belt running.
Like, if you're not going to give Ricciardo the seat next year at Red Bull, then what's the point in keeping him about?
Like, and that's what I mean in terms of like, if he beats...
I think just...
He still has to prove himself, though.
Yeah, what
I
happens if Yuki
decision,
beats him?
But at the end of the day, if he doesn't thrash Yuki, again, I don't think he will, like...
But I can't see Ricciardo doing any worse a job than Checo. I'm sorry, I can't. Like,
Checo is doing a really bad job.
The gap is
like,
huge.
But then what about if Tsunoda? What about if Tsunoda beats Ricciardo? How do you then drop Yuki?
Well, I think that's Ricciardo's ultimatum, isn't it?
Yeah,
he's got to beat Yuki Tsunoda. Yeah,
I think he will. I think he will over the...
I'm backing Yuki.
With the injury, right? It depends. Yeah, it's hard with Yuki because I think Yuki's done more than enough to prove like he's a capable... You know, and he deserves to be in this sport. I think you could argue like he took a bit... Like he was a slow burner. Like his first year got absolutely... dicked by glass.
There was potential there.
Abu Dhabi was the only good one.
He was so bad that if they dropped him after the first season, that you couldn't even like make an argument for it. But it's because they didn't have any more
juniors.
Well,
he said himself he was surprised.
He was shocked in Spa when the contract announced. He was like,
so honest.
Yeah, he was like, in Spa in the press conference 2021, I'm never going to forget it. When his contract got announced or like confirmed, he was like, yeah, even I was surprised. And I was like, oh, that's such a Yuki thing to say. But he developed into, I think, a really good Grand Prix driver now in, 3 years later, especially with Gasly leaving the team. I think Yuki is much more battle hardened now and he knows exactly what's at stake if Ricciardo beats him. So I think he's really turned.
Also, I think Lawson's proved a lot today.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
The ability to keep it on the island. Has anyone ever had a tougher rookie test?
I don't actually think there's ever been a harder first race.
Two red flags in FP3 on a tire that you've never driven before. To go into qualifying, again, on a tire that you only drove for sort of 23 minutes earlier that morning, to then go into a race where you start on the slick tire and it starts downpouring before then it goes back to dry. You have to deal with a safety car restart and then suddenly it goes downpouring once more to keep it out the walls where his teammate skirted it through
the
gravel.
Never went off,
Zhou Guan Yu went straight into the wall. Yep. He battled with Charles Leclerc. That produced some better experience as well. Mm. So I think he did a really good job and it shows the Red Bull that they've got a serious racer on their hands. He's adaptable and that's what they need.
He never got dropped as well because we were watching his times. He was never like 5 or 10 seconds off.
No, not at all.
He was always in that. Back. He was always keeping up with the pace, always on the pack. And so I think he's done a fantastic job. I'm so excited for Monza now. I want to see more of Liam Lawson.
So I mean, he now inserts himself into that conversation.
That's what I mean
with
Ricciardo. The guy who's in there is the guy who's trying to take your seat and he's just produced a really good kind of, debut in tricky conditions. So,
And he's got 6 weeks as well because he's been racing in Japanese Super Formula and he's second or third in the standings there after he had an incident at Twin Ring Motegi last week.
A big one.
Yeah. But even then, he's still in the hunt and with two races to go, they're not on for another at least 6 weeks time.
That
so
is
he
so
is available.
Well, yeah, because the finale's during the Mexican Grand Prix.
Imagine that Formula One calendar just went Vegas and it was like, right, okay, everyone else, we'll see you in 2 months, lads. Final race of the season, Abu Dhabi? Yeah, all right, cool.
There was something like that in Formula Two. Was it 2021?
It was when they played stupid calendar.
Yeah, where there was a 2 month break. I think we came
they're
back
trying
to
like three races a weekend or something, and it was just
it did not.
Yeah, because if need be, he could do. He could do Italy, Singapore, Japan, Qatar, US. As in,
Japan. Him around there after Super Formula as well. The experience there.
Yeah. And the finale's at. It's a double header at Suzuka as well. So
brilliant.
Yeah, a big performance from Liam Lawson. I'm excited to see. But
happy with him.
Unfortunately, another driver I want to talk about in terms of risk, and there were rumours, and I want to talk to you a bit about this, James, as being the indie head in the room, right? Because Logan Sargeant, as much as it was a good qualifying, put it into the wall. difficult start to his rookie career in Formula One, and there's been a lot of murmurings about his seat potentially being up for grabs and maybe Alex Palou. First of all, with the Palou angle, just explain to everyone, because he's basically, Palou did, this is obviously a very broad way of covering it, but Palou did to McLaren what Piastri did to Alpine, kind of.
That's pretty much exactly what happened. So they had an agreement, a verbal agreement, yeah, that for 2024...
Nudge, nudge, wink, wink.
Yeah. Yeah. For 2024, Alex Palou would be joining the McLaren organisation, where, because of course they have three teams, Formula E, F1 and IndyCar.
Yep. Yeah.
So he would be under the license of Zak Brown to put him wherever he likes. And so he did that on the knowledge that they hadn't signed Piastri yet, and that that seat in Formula One in 2024 or 2025 could easily become his. Yeah. And he'd slide straight in there. He has a super license as IndyCar champion, and perhaps as of this evening could become a two-time IndyCar champion. So no worries there. And the fact is that he could, if he drove a year in Zak Brown's IndyCars, he'd be most likely to go for an F1 seat, because his management team were very clear that he's now dropped them after a second contract mess in 12 months. He's been very, his management were very clear that they were looking to push him towards a Formula One seat. So now he's out of McLaren's, out of the McLaren umbrella. Almost the most likely F1 target seat for him is that Williams. And the driver that's most under threat is Logan Sargeant. I mean, he's not strung, as we mentioned in the pre-race build-up before the Dutch Grand Prix, he's not strung together a weekend properly. And even this weekend was exemplary of that. I mean, he showed good pace in the free practice sessions, got into Q3, binned it. Had a bad start after starting 10th, and then ended up in the wall.
17th.
He was 17th after the first lap, exactly, and then ended up in the wall. So for Logan Sargeant, he's under a bit of pressure. And add to the fact that James Vowles was clear that he wasn't a James Vowles signing, he was a Jos Capito signing, and they deliberately didn't add him to the Mercedes junior team when he was...
Because they had the opportunity when he was still at Mercedes.
And when he was budgetless, Mercedes didn't sign him, and eventually Williams did, and that's how he got his Formula 2 seat and so moved into their ranks. But... you know, he's under pressure, and those being so far off Albon, more than 7/10 per race in qualifying, combined the fact that Albon's now scored all of Williams's points, I think 15 now this season, and Logan still hasn't found that good result. I mean, there's been flashes of greatness. That start in Bahrain was awesome. There have been some good qualifying performances.
He's been better than Latifi, but that is a low bar, ultimately.
That bar is like, I think, buried 6 feet.
Yeah.
Like, a mutual friend of ours, JB, I think he coined him the American Latifi.
Yeah, you know what? He was saying it when I was and you know what, I think there have been those odd moments, like again Saudi qualifying, where he did go quicker than Alex and got
the lead. He actually crashed at the inner Saudi qualifying as well, which people, out of frustration, he had a lap deleted, but then out of frustration, I think his last run
flipped
the wall because he just went on the throttle too much. He's had a rough start. I mean, a lot of people have been critical, actually, because I made a video kind of talking about his future and where he is. A lot of people were super critical, you know, in the comments, of saying like, have we reached the point where we're not even giving rookies a chance anymore? But it's just because how competitive Formula One is, you know. That's as simply as it is, because the rookies have been so good the past few years, and that's the bar. You know, the likes of Piastri and Leclerc, they've raised the bar so much.
I was about to say, we've been so spoiled, I think, with rookies recently. The quality of F1 drivers is the best that it's ever been. I think the quality of rookies is probably the best it's ever been. I mean, I remember like when I first started watching Formula One, this was like ages ago, with like the early noughties and shit, you got people going from like Formula 3, like straight into F1, because the guys in the actual junior category weren't even that good. And like Kimi Raikkonen.
That's funny, because
like,
that's exactly what Max did.
Yeah.
Max.
But he was the exception to the rule.
He is the one exception.
He blew everybody away there. And on that, I mean, you're right. And I also think that not only that we talked about a bit earlier, but the stakes being much higher in Formula 1 means that they can't afford it, but also, all the teams are much closer now. There's not a clear hierarchy where you can't bleed a driver in. Say back in 2016, you had the backmarkers of Manor, Marussia and Sauber.
Yeah, they're in their own championship.
Exactly, like they're in their own championship. So if you score 1 point, that's a win for you. Yeah. So now, in 2016, we had 22 drivers. Now there's just 20. There's not that opportunity to bleed in rookies. So for the teams, where they're under so much financial pressure in a cost cap era as well, they can't be affording new parts. I mean, you see Gunther Steiner is obviously very clear about that after Haas destroyed two of their three new front wings.
Part of Schumacher got dropped for a reason, you know. He had all this, you know, and obviously the name carries a lot of merit in the sport, and that wasn't enough to keep him in that seat. And I think, you know, obviously yes, the standards of like certain rookies have been really high. I think Yuki, I think maybe the Honda connection saved him.
Yeah.
Because that
yeah,
was still when time. Honda and Red Bull thought they were going, well, at least Red Bull thought they were going the long term with Honda.
Yeah.
You know, if that's happening this year and Yuki's a rookie this year, then I think he's probably losing that seat.
For sure.
I think I would want to give Logan a bit more of a chance because I think at the end of the day, he's in the Williams, which is like...
What's the alternatives as well? I mean, apart from Palou, who is not, by no means, you know, a certainty as well.
Vesti, maybe. I mean, he's a Mercedes junior, but then do Williams want to move away from being just a Mercedes B team? But
yeah.
He's and second currently in the Formula 2.
But who's the rookie?
Alex is showing there is performance in this car. And Alex is, I think he's a great Formula 1 driver. You know, he's not a Verstappen. He's not a Hamilton. He's not a Leclerc. Like, He's very good, right? But what do Williams need? Like, Williams are in the growth. They need the best drivers in their car. This is kind of what Haas have... Well, they've moved away. They got burnt badly by having two rookies.
Yeah.
Now they've got Hülkenberg in doing bits. Magnussen's been a bit inconsistent.
He got a new contract.
Yeah, he's not been great, but he knows that team really well.
And so let's not forget the quality that he was showing last year. Like, you know...
Got that pole position?
Exactly. You don't just... You know, he's been at that team 7 years or something like that. Mm. You know, obviously with a break in the middle, but you don't just ditch someone because they've had a bad 6 months. No. Like, he's still a quality driver. So, you know, if he continues this next year, different conversation. But I remember telling you, like, Alex Albon is a really, really good driver. He is not someone that you should be like whitewashed by. You know, you should be at least two or three qualifying sessions at least, you know, just two or three quality sessions. Like Piastri, you know, I mean, Norris has actually been dominant in terms of like the stats compared to Piastri, but there's still been one or two kind of
the
quality sessions in races.
Like 2/10, so
exactly.
It's actually,
so it's just, but again, when it comes to like the Vesti argument, why would Williams ditch a rookie right now for another rookie to restart the project? Keep in mind that Logan Sargeant is their young driver. He's a Williams Academy driver, so there's no Mercedes pulling the strings or anything like that. And I do think that they have a bit of pride in that, the fact that he is their own homegrown talent. And ultimately, I do think that there's not really any other options that stick out. If there was a Piastri, you know, if there was a Piastri right now in Formula 2, you know, different story.
Yeah.
If there was an experienced driver that was kind of like really, you know, really wanting to get into that team, Mick Schumacher, yes, but he's by no means a certainty. So that's why I think he is going to be there, because I think they're going to give him another season because there isn't that many great alternatives.
These teams aren't obliged. I'm sorry. I don't think that in this day and age, they're not obliged to give young drivers an opportunity. Like they're obliged to do what's best by their team to maximize points and maximize like
the
performances. And if there is a Charles Leclerc who's insane in F2 and Oscar Piastri, and you know, Felipe Drogovic maybe deserved a chance, but it was his third season in F2. So again, there's more question marks. When someone comes in and wins it straight away, like a Piastri, like a Leclerc, you look at Verstappen's performance, like there's a reason they gave him a seat because they thought they might lose him to Mercedes. So I think there's, again, I just think who's the best driver for Williams? Is Sargeant the best driver for Williams of the available drivers? No. I think we've not seen enough in the first half of a season, I think, for them to feel obliged to keep Sargeant. And I want young drivers to get a shot, but also like if Logan's getting a shot, well, what about you know, Ilott, who's had to move over to Indy, and Marcus Armstrong and
Robert Schwartzman as well,
Lundgaard, and what's Schwartzman not getting a seat? Like Schwartzman's junior career is every bit as good as Lawson.
Schwartzman,
he finished ahead of Joe Guan Yu in the 2021 F2 season
Where's Schwartzman's seat?
Schwartzman was consistently he never won obviously the Formula 2 championship, but he was just consistently always up there. Formula 3 champion,
wasn't he?
Exactly, he was always there. So yeah, there's a lot of drivers who I think obviously missed out, you know, just because of timing. I mean, I think 2020 is the big kind of sliding doors moment, where originally it was supposed to be Callum Ilott in the Haas for 2021 and Mick Schumacher in the Alfa Romeo. Obviously, then because of the way finances were at Haas, they had to also, you know, they had to take Mick Schumacher and Mazepin. So there was a massive kind of, you know, sliding doors moment there. But yeah, some people just miss out because of timing.
Because James, because how good of like, How impressed have you been by, again, like Armstrong, Lundgaard, Ilott? These are all drivers who were in F2 and aiming for Formula 1 and have decided to go stateside because they've not seen an opportunity to get a seat.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a really good question, because you look at how they sort of line up and what we're comparing them to, because it's if you compare them to each other, then like they did in their junior career, then they're obviously doing a really good job. And actually, if you compare them to the rookies that have come up through Indy next, which is the road to Indy, it's the equivalent of Formula 3 and Formula 2, but in America, they're doing a very, very solid job. I mean, you compare you know, Callum Ilott got on pole position, got on the front row at the finale of last season in probably at the time the worst car. Mm-hmm. And I know they're much more similar in a spec series, but it just shows, it goes to show just the talent of driver that's being missed out on.
In, Lundgaard won recently, didn't he?
Yeah, Lundgaard run in Toronto. He's the most recent maiden winner. And you compare him maybe to someone like Kyle Kirkwood, who the star of the Road to Indy over the last few years. And I mean, in Will Buxton's 2025 lineup predictions, he had him in the Haas, but those were made 18 months ago. And I mean, something like
I remember that.
Yeah. Yeah. those were some wild predictions.
They were pure Buxton vibes.
if you look at something
the
like if you look
car,
at something like
that, car, sorry.
You know, they're both doing very reasonable jobs, and it just goes to show that the talent pool at the moment is so incredibly high. Just over the course of two series, and you know, I've been so impressed by Callum Ilott. I mean, he speaks so well. He's ninth in the oval standings, which, you know, it just shows to show how quickly you can take on something.
Yeah.
Because, you know, indie drivers that have come from Europe have never raced on an oval before, and suddenly they're thrown in and they've got five to do in a season. So it's a hugely tough test for them. And yeah, I've been incredibly impressed. And then on the flip side of that was someone like Alex Palou, who's dominating probably the most competitive series in the world with 27 full-time entries, to be the star of, in the middle of the season, five weekends where you go from winning the Indy Road Course race, pole position, the fastest speed ever at the Indy 500, 28th to 4th in the Indy 500, having been punted into the pit wall in just 97 laps, which was incredible. The fact that he nearly finished on the podium, there's no podium in Indianapolis,
in the top Williams,
was insane. And then to back that up with winning at Detroit and then winning at Road America and then winning at Mid-Ohio, it's just like this guy is a
serious
freak. And although his junior career doesn't, you know, show that,
I was just about to say that, because I remember him being in, like, I think it was still called GP3 at the time. And he was just kind of like middle of the road.
I think it was like ninth or something.
Yeah,
it was
good, but without being great. And it's just that thing that maybe some people get better as the cars get quicker.
Yeah. Yeah.
But if he went to Formula One, he wouldn't be like any other rookie. I think he's a well-seasoned driver.
It would be the Nick De Vries kind of expectations of, like.
Yeah. But also like I'm not being funny, right? De Vries, it's easy to look back on De Vries titles with skepticism. He was very fortunate
to win in 2020.
He, like, F2, Latifi came second. I'm not being funny. It wasn't the best caliber F2 season. You look at Palou, where he's so consistently, it was his second season when he won his first title with IndyCar. Yeah. And he was, fifth last year, and now he's going to win this one, like, at a canter as well. There's levels, and I think Palou's shown, again, not the best junior. I mean, look at when you compare Sargeant and Piastri's, like, very early single seater career, Sargeant's is more impressive.
Yeah.
And then Piastri goes on and wins these four titles back to back. So it's like, I think, again, different drivers develop at different rates, and especially for Ilott as well, because I think Ilott was super unlucky to not get an opportunity. I mean, he was being touted for Sauber being like a Ferrari junior, but then also we have to talk a bit about Zhou Guanyu, because unfortunately it does sound that, and there's been rumors from the paddock that his seat is at risk. Doesn't seem to have the backing, unfortunately. Even though, like, for me, he's been, given how young he is relative to Valtteri, how early on this is his second year in Formula One. It would be a shame to see him go. And obviously Alfa Romeo potentially move into Haas for next year. But what's going on at that team? Because that's Audi already own, like, I think it's about 25%. I'm not sure exactly, but they've already purchased their first stake in that team officially.
And they're stepping up their
fully
investment.
Takeover. Yeah. So, like, what do you do if you're
Can
in
I
that
just say personally, if I see a Formula One grid next season, right, and there's Alfa Romeo listed, as they hopefully, I mean, they should be, realistically.
They'll be Sauber.
Alfa
Romeo Haas.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, of course. And I see Valtteri Bottas in that seat, but I do not see Guan Yu Zhou.
Yeah, that would be.
That is a war crime. Yeah, I'm sorry, that's mental.
That's
and it's not because Zhou is battering Bottas or anything. It's very even, not at all. I think Bottas has been all right. But Guan Yu Zhou is in his second season in Formula One and has, in terms of his moments for the season, been better than Bottas.
Up. Yeah,
Today, Bottas was just, you know,
Was he in the race even? I don't know.
Who knows?
You tell me.
Genuinely. Didn't see him once.
I think, yeah, genuinely. Like, whereas obviously Joe was unfortunate in the end, caught out by the weather, caught out by the downpour. But
yeah, but like in those conditions.
For a long period.
We saw in those conditions, like everyone was going off. He was
people
just
were going off trying to get
the
back
barrier.
To the pit lane. Do you know what I mean? Like, it was crazy.
He did a really good job to at least try and stay in that top 10. I think I've been really impressed this season with how he's stepped up. Mm-hmm. And it has been super close.
I think P5 in Hungary, remember?
Like, yeah.
If the car doesn't let him down at the start, then.
And the only thing is, obviously, there's that poor chair factor in terms of like he's obviously leading that championship at the moment. He's the only one I think that can kind of get in the way of that because he's a Sauber young driver. So I think that's the only thing for Joe is it all depends on Teo Porcher basically because he'll put the pressure on if Joe doesn't quite step it up as well. It's a tricky one. I honestly have no clue who is going to be in that Alfa Romeo / Sauber next year because it's one of those decisions I think will literally go to the wire.
The F2 was mad though, wasn't it? Like today, because none of the front runners, so Porsche,
you can say that, but just don't tell me.
Yeah, I was on the train.
I'm saying none of the top runners had. I got points. Like,
they went through an entire weekend without a title battle shifting at all.
It was mad.
Saturday's race was called off.
Yeah,
Sunday's race ended with none of the front runners.
Yeah,
breaching the checkered flag.
None of the front runners. That, so it's still going to be like it's even more.
Did Roy Nassani win?
No spoilers. But yeah, Porsche's one of them that. I don't know. This is going to be his third. Is this his third season?
Yeah, it is. He was only 17 when he was in the very finished first season. Yeah, so you kind of be like,
and also when you look at the amount of years that he spent in single seaters before Formula 2, he has not had a lot of experience in single seaters before he got to F2. So it's a weird one with him. Yes, he's in his third season. Just like for example, Felipe Drugovich was last year, but he coming into he was still quite a very inexperienced driver. So he's still super young. I do think he should have won that title last year. I expected him to be honest.
Yeah.
And he's got to win it. If he doesn't win it this year, I don't blame Sauber for not kind of taking anything any further with him.
Yeah.
What do Audi want, and how much influence do Audi have as well? Because there's been a lot of talk about science.
They're still a long way off, though, aren't they? They're at least they're 2.5 full seasons away.
But they're already starting to like Seidel was an Audi
Andreas Seidel, exactly. And but at the same time, they've got to think about the now as well. And for what is Alfa Romeo at the moment, they quite simply just don't have the budget for those driver salaries. In this present moment, so they can't go and snap up, as you say, Carlos Sainz, which almost looks, it feels nailed on. That's the most Carlos Sainz move that's ever happened.
Yeah.
They almost can't afford to do that as much as they'd love to. So they've got a little bit of a balancing act, and I actually think I'd be shocked if Valtteri Bottas wasn't in the seat, and then the other one's almost going to be decided come Abu Dhabi.
They'd have to pay Bottas out of his contract.
Yeah, because he's contracted for next year.
Is it worth it? Is there a driver available that Alfa Romeo, Sauber, Audi are like, if we can get them now, kind of like McLaren did with Piastri, they kind of paid off Ricciardo and like basically have allowed now Palou to leave their sphere of influence to get Piastri, and it seems to have paid dividends.
I also think a lot of teams, because we know that the driver market next year for 2025 is going to be the big one. So many drivers out of contract. And so I think a lot of the teams are just thinking, right, just stability for the next year, and then 2024/5 is going to be the big kind of options with loads of drivers on the table. So I think that's why a lot of teams will just go for stability. There's no point of kind of you want to wait for the drivers to be available potentially, because if you drop Valtteri now, where does that put you next year? So I think that's one of the things. He will be
I'm just thinking, because again, this whole talking point comes from Joe being at risk.
Yeah,
would you take Joe at Williams over Sargeant?
Yeah,
probably. Yeah. I mean, he's an experienced head, and he won't give them. I mean, I know he bumps out today, but then so did Sargeant, and they were completely different incidents. I mean, Joe's pretty much everybody struggled to stop Hamilton at the escape road. Yeah. Sonoda went through the gravel, etc. Perez went into the wall
as well.
Bottas went off as well, just in front of him. So I would definitely take Joe if I was Williams. But then also, would you look to Alex Palou, because that he is going to be not the same type of rookie. He's not raw. Like Sargeant is, a bit incident prone. And I feel like that's the difference between a driver that might come from F2 versus a driver that comes from Indy. Palou's already battle hardened. He knows how to win. He knows how to get the best out of the car without pushing it over the limit. So, we've got to weigh it up, I think. But yeah, if I was Williams, I'd take Joe Guanyu.
Mm. Would you, hang on a minute.
Would you?
Joe or Palou? Let's go through everyone.
Oh, Joe or Palou.
Joe or Palou.
Hard.
One word answer.
Okay. Okay, can I just give like one preface? It's kind of not.
I was like 12 words. It's too much.
Fuck the feds. I like new things. Palo.
What about Tomo? Okay, he's still thinking.
Joe.
I've got to take Alex Palou. 100%.
Do you know what? I'd probably take Palou because I'd want to see that IndyCar.
I'd love to see Palou in F1.
I think he's a quality driver, multiple time champion. Like that's what he's going to be, of course. So it's just so exciting, you know, because we see that kind of Formula One to IndyCar, you know, obviously with Marcus Ericsson. I'd want to see it happen the other way.
Maybe Palou actually. Because
I'm selling it.
For the here and now, I think Palou, even though Palou's not, he's done a bit of McLaren. He's done FP1 at Austin last year.
Yeah.
Like he's, you know, done their old car program, what they call it. So he has got that. And, you know, Piastri had similar experience. Like Alpine used to get him in old Alpines all the time.
Yeah.
Maybe Palou actually. He's still only 26, actually. He only recently turned 26. Actually, no, I'm going Palou.
Yeah. Because even Indy drivers, they're battle hardened and no slouch. I mean, the amount of money that Williams were prepared to pay Scott Dixon back in 2008 for him to join their F1 program, only for him to go and win the Indy 500 and the title at a canter just because he could. The difference, I think, is becoming less and less between the two series, especially in terms of driver skill. And, I mean, Palou is the master of the road course. Of his first nine IndyCar wins were all on road courses. Mm. Until then, he won this year at Detroit, and that was his first sort of street course win. So, and the majority of F1 tracks are natural terrain road courses. So, I mean, it's almost right up his street. And you know, last year AlphaTauri was so set on trying to get Colton Herta.
Which I still don't really get, because like I've only really started got into IndyCar like this season, and everyone last year was talking about Colton Herta. I don't really know too much about him. He seems like he's a quick guy, but I don't see the consistency there. Maybe he's being beaten by his teammate, isn't he?
Yeah.
As well.
So at the moment in the standings, it's very close. I mean, Andretti have struggled pretty much.
Yeah, I was going to say, Andretti have been struggling for a while now.
Everything except street courses, they've struggled. They've nailed pretty much their street course package because Kyle Kirkwood has won twice they've been on the pole. Grosjean would have won in St. Petersburg if he wasn't taken about by McLaughlin. So, you know, they have struggled on these other road courses. And as a result, Colton Herta has almost gone out the frame. And in comes Alex Palou, and he's a much more seasoned, almost more well-rounded driver. Maybe not quite with the absolute raw speed. I mean, he's no slouch. He's not slow at all. He went lights to flag win in Detroit, and he went 35 seconds win in Laguna Seca at the season finale last year, which is the most dominant win in
IndyCar.
Someone said, there was a quote somewhere where someone said that it's Verstappen-esque what Palou's doing.
I mean, and that's in a spec series, and no one was lapping as quick as him that day. So he has that ability that I just believe that maybe Zhou Guanyu is lacking that extra edge. And so although it might take a little bit of time to get up to speed with, you know, F1 cars are more about the neck and G-forces, whereas Indy cars are more about, can you muscle it around with arms and shoulders? But I
Colton's still only 23.
Yeah.
You know, Palou's 26. So I think there's still potentially long-term opportunities there. But I think as well, I think Colton would have done a good job if he'd come in for sure. But I think...
I'm not sure. In that car, like the one thing that you don't need is someone who's perhaps a little bit erratic, perhaps a little bit inconsistent. Like, I think that car needs an experienced hand. That AlphaTauri was, I think that would have been the wrong car for...
Yeah, I mean, Palou doesn't make very many mistakes, does he? I think for that team, I think Hurt would have been quick, but I think for that team...
Yeah, that's why I think in the Williams, you know, for Palou in the Williams, brilliant. For Hurt this year to be in the AlphaTauri would have been... I'm not sure how it would have gone. I don't think it would have gone much better than De Vries.
But again, do we think that this whole, you know, contract issue, because ultimately, you know, Palou was contracted to race for, well, he wasn't contract, but kind of was, for McLaren in IndyCar in 2024. That's now not happening. He's staying at Chip Ganassi.
Zach wanted him in the, what is it, Extreme E car. That's what happened.
But do we think that decision has anything to do with Formula One? Like, do you think, James, like, do you think that has anything to do with F1, or that's just he wants to start Jeep Ganassi?
Well, I think, I mean, it goes two ways, because last year, McLaren were very solid and, you know, they had race wins. They were looking perhaps over the course of the season, they were able to challenge Chip Ganassi Racing and Team Penske, which no driver has been able to do so since Ryan Hunter-Reay won the IndyCar title in 2012. Every other season, it's been a Ganassi or a Penske that's won it. So for for Palou, it looked like McLaren were making steps forward, plus with the promise of Formula One. That was a great move. And now that Formula One door is closed with McLaren, there's no reason why he joined a team that hasn't won a race this year.
Yeah, what's the point?
With a team that has had three different race winners in its team, that's finished in the top five 81% of times over, in the top 10, the four drivers, so Armstrong or Sato in the 11 car, Ericsson, Dixon and Palou have finished in the top 10 81% of times over the course of the season, which is an unbelievable stat if you include things like DNS, first lap incidents, etc. So there's no reason why at the moment to hone his skills, he would leave Chip Ganassi Racing where he can win titles before then. And it also means he gives him more opportunities. If AlphaTauri come hunting, there's no reason why he couldn't go there. If Williams come hunting, etc.
And I think for Palou as well, it's important. I know, you know, Scott Dixon had ambition to race in Formula One. Like that was, you know, that was his plan and it didn't pay out and he's had an amazing career in IndyCar. And I think Palou, he could stay in IndyCar and have an amazing career for the next 20 years, like if he really wanted to. Mm-hmm. Like he can go way into his 40s, like lots of IndyCar drivers do. But I think if he wants this shot at F1 and to still be this appealing kind of not rookie, like I think he can't afford to wait too much longer either. And I think that's where like a Williams opportunity would be sick.
It depends if the motivation is his motivation to be in Formula One. That's the
real. I think his management company, Breaking Tires, they literally said that they were helping him on the direction to F1.
I think the decision that he made based on not being at McLaren means that the end goal necessarily, but like
it's an ambition.
An ambition is to be in Formula One.
But two IndyCar titles, that's sick.
Yeah.
Not many drivers win two titles
by the age of 26. And if he wins it tonight, he'll be joined one of three drivers that have won it with two races to go. In the entire history of the series since 1911, only three drivers have won it with more than two races to go, and not since Dan Weldon in 2005 has it been won with more than one one race to go. So he's got an opportunity to build a legacy, as people in IndyCar Paddock say. He's doing a Scott Dixon, better than Scott Dixon. Dixon's a six-time champion. So
because I think Dixon at one point, like there were some like rumors of Formula One like way early in like the 2000s, but he just said no because he like loved IndyCar.
Yeah, and I mean, that's for Palou, it's where you balance, you know, do I want to try and run for points in a Williams and do what Alex Albon's doing, or do I like to lead and I want to be up at the front? And
yes,
I want
to. It's different types of drivers, isn't it, as well? Yeah.
And I want to have my face on the BorgWarner Trophy as an Indy 500 champion. So he's got a balance.
Do you want to live in the States and do a domestic championship versus flying all around the world? Do you know what I mean?
Key for him as well is being from Spain, is a lot of the reason why he wanted to sign with McLaren is he wanted to move back home. Right. And you know, with your Formula One, if you're working with Williams, you know, the UK is much closer to Spain than the United States is. So that little bit of homesickness might play into account as well. I mean, he's been all around the world to try and pursue this Formula One dream. He raced in the Super Formula in Japan before then going to the IndyCar.
Yeah, of course.
He's trying everything he can, and at some point he deserves a shot whilst he's still this like bright star that's 26 or 27.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah. Because once he starts getting 28, 29, then it's 30. Yeah.
Someone like Joseph Newgarden, probably that ship will have sailed.
Yeah.
And I mean, he was an IndyCar champion at the age of 27 or something. And at that point, he could have gone. But eventually, that was the opportunity. That opportunity is now gone.
Well, there you go. Well, James Vowles, if you're watching, we know you are. Sign him up.
Logan Sargeant might well have been, to be fair. He sat on the track. He sat on the track for half.
Yeah, he was on the deck chair for an hour.
Really comfortable deck chair.
Stream open.
He was watching the last lap, of course.
Yeah, why would you not?
Of course. Right, let's wrap it there, boys. We've been live for long and... Oh, it's a long race with the red flags as well.
But, still 1-0, by the way.
Still 1-0 to Newcastle.
I'll take that at the moment.
You take them.
They've hit the bar.
James, where can the people find you?
I write on my website, singleseaterspace.co.uk, which you can all read about. There'll be an F1 race report up there as soon as possible, and then an IndyCar race report after the Bomarito Automotive Group 500 this evening. And then I'm also on TikTok at singleseaterspace.
Bosh, love Jeez. It. Aldas?
Aldas on literally everything. but also, simple. To be fair, my socials are, because everyone's took my handle for some reason, Aldas001 on Instagram and Twitter, and then just Aldas on YouTube, where I waffle about F1, of course.
Yeah.
Niren, what are you up to?
Not much by the sound of it.
Hopefully not watching the rest of this. Well, hopefully not watching when people lose, but I'm not holding out too much hope. Off to see family later, but other than that, nice. We're out here
and we'll be back for Monza. You're watching this on Tuesday,
indeed.
Monza this weekend, where Max can make it 10 in a row
and can make the record.
And I think Seb messaged him
He did. No. After he got 5 wins in a row.
Oh, is it?
After 5 wins in a row, Seb messaged him like, "You got this." Or something.
And
like that.
The video that I made about Seb's 9 in a row, unbeatable, is not looking good. You know what? No,
you made that video like 4 months ago as well.
Yeah, I know. Tough.
You're gonna get a bump of views, mate.
Yeah, well,
every cloud. You know what I mean?
Playing the long game.
No. Change the title of that video. Yes. The now beatable record.
Yes.
Just change the thumbnail. You're great.
We'll see. YouTube edit's not great though. Thank you all for watching, listening wherever you are in the world. If you're watching on YouTube, drop a like and a comment. If you're listening on audio only platforms, give it a 5-star, a rating, reply. Where else can they find us, Niren?
They can find us in the third page of the 4th Harry Potter book.
I was about to say the sun.
Which one's that?
No, that would be crazy, to be fair.
That would be crazy.
On the front, no.
Oh, wow.
I don't know which one that is, to be honest with you. I can't really remember off the top of my head, but it's in the third page there. Open it up. Contents, boom, the last lap. The full video as well. It's not just audio.
He who shall not be named.
Exactly. Tom Hart.
Oh, no, Lewis isn't here though. He's downstairs.
He's bald as well.
Thank you again, everyone. Appreciate you taking the time. We'll see you for Monza.
Bye.
Peace and love.
Bye.